woke up this morning with the sun down shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down.
Hello and welcome to Extraction Jacks. I'm Tom Howery. Ricardo on the board. SP Futures up 40. NASDAQ Futures up 186 as the Buy the Dippers try again today. They tried yesterday and I kind of smacked because we were up a bunch of points yesterday. And we ended up down 28 in the S&P and down 160 in the NASDAQ. Well, we've made more than that back this morning. We will see if it holds after a couple of crummy days in a row. We have Professor Kevin.
Morning.
What's up, man? How are you?
Well, I'm doing all right. My buy the dip activity is going to be related to ice cream cones.
Well, there you go. You priced any of those lately?
Ice cream cones?
Yeah. They're on the list of...
Nothing wrong with a $6 ice cream cone.
I know, it's... Why didn't I stop for a...
I would be too crude to say on the podcast at the price of an ice cream cone what they should come with. But we'll have that discussion offline.
Why didn't I stop at one of the way out, at one of the, what used to call them, a Dairy Queen or Tate. It was a kind of a private place and had a couple of mediums. It was, I don't know, $8.50 or something. Like, wow, that's cool. Okay then. Just the way it is.
On the other hand, they have these really cool packages of ice cream thingies in the store where you can actually scoop your own ice cream. So
really,
it's a little bit better deal.
Well, there's still some of the few places that you have to go to get the really good stuff, like the Plush Horse and stuff, where they make it themselves every day. Not too many of those places left, but there's a few.
Yeah, there's I'm pretty close to Amish territory, and there are some. Amish creameries that are really good in the area.
Oh, don't tell Audrey you go down there.
She thinks too late, I suspect.
Yeah, too late, I suspect. Not real big on the Amish because they run puppy mills.
I understand that. I get that criticism. But they also run really good restaurants.
But Amish Acres closed though, right?
Amish Acres might be. The Essen House is not.
Really?
So that's still in action. That's in Middlebury.
Well, there you go.
So we have some options there. We talk about the manufacturing base in this area a lot. A lot of Amish working in manufacturing.
Well, there's another big story here in Illinois, or in Chicago. Who knows if it's really going to come to fruition or something? But what was the big story yesterday? I'll take it up here. But the for those that don't know the geography of Chicago, not that I expect everybody to. There was a big announcement yesterday about there was a massive steel making facility down on the south side called Southworks. And essentially,
that
was
really southeast side, right?
Yeah, southeast side. It was essentially in. It's almost like a plot of land. I don't think it was landfill, Kevin, but it's kind of in the lake, right? I mean, it's like almost bordered on three sides by the lake, at least on two. And it was this massive steel mill that not only fed I mean, steel mills have a lot of people that have to work around them, do stuff. And plus, when you spit out steel, there's all kinds of fabricating facilities around you, people that stamp it, people do all the other stuff with it. Because when you roll steel, you want to make a railroad car, you want to do anything, it's very simple. You slit it, you know, you cut it in the strips you want, and then you bend it and you punch it. You bend it and then you put the holes in it and then you screw it together and that's what you do. I mean, it never changes, does it? I mean, so anyway, I don't know. God, Kevin, when did those guys leave? 30 years ago? 40? I mean, they closed down Southworks. If you would have gone down like 107th Street in those days, it was all these small, you know, finishing up the steel, making the little stamping plant for maybe the hoods of a car.
Related businesses, yeah. Tangential businesses, yeah.
And it was all intertwined by railroad cars, their little railroad tracks. And our buddy Jim Vervac, his dad was one of the switchmen over there. And that's all these guys did all day long was, you know, go over and pick up a car of a seal and deliver it to one of the other guys. And then when he was done stamping it, go get it from there and maybe put it on the main line and send it somewhere. You know, there was these constant, boy, those guys, everybody had a pint in their pocket. It was a different world, Kevin. I mean, those guys, you know, everybody had a cigar, everybody had a pint in their pocket, and, you know, everybody's drinking all, it was different, you know, like I said, it wasn't a better world, it was a different world. And, and the whole area was just honeycombed by these railroad tracks and steel. And all of a sudden, they had all, you know, those guys left, and it's been, now you still have the works in Gary, and you still have, that's still a pretty good sized plant, and there's one west of, east of there by Ogden Dunes, it's a Bethlehem steel plant that does some kind of steel.
Bethlehem is in Burns Harbor area.
Yeah.
I think Inland still has their...
Well, Bethlehem's toast. There's somebody else now. They were Inland and they became... I think they're at Cleveland Cliffs. Just drove by there. Cleveland Cliffs bought them. Go by there, the sign says Cleveland Cliffs.
I'll believe you.
Yeah, so... But anyway, this whole area, and it's been... It's... I won't say it's super... It's kind of like a brownfield, Kevin. You know, there was so much manufacturing in there. I don't know if you want to put houses there necessarily, but I don't know that it's major league polluted either. It's kind of, what do they call it? It's a brownfield where it's kind of half-assed polluted. And there's been people trying to put stuff there forever. But now the area, in one man's opinion, has degraded so dramatically. I mean, CVS was the school down there. They had, well, they have 2,500 kids in there or something coming. It was like a college.
It's a really big school in the day, yeah.
And I don't know.
CVS being, for those who don't know what that is, Chicago Vocational School, big high school, and you can still, as you drive by on the Chicago Skyway, you'll still see that big building on the south side of the road, about halfway across the Skyway, or halfway down the Skyway.
Well, yesterday the governor, Pritzker, announced some sort of a deal where they're going to put some massive thing down there, some type of a manufacturing facility, and I'll find it here, I promise. But they show the artist renderings of it and stuff. Kind of the whole neighborhood's like, obviously something like that. If it actually you could pull it off, would bring the neighborhood maybe back. But when something's allowed to degrade to that extent, I don't know if some place wants to go there. Do you? I mean, I hope so, but
it will always depend on the tax incentives. That was, you know, is Pritzker taking advantage of an enterprise zone designation?
It's got to be. But here, former Southworks site.
Well, and the reason I say that is that you have an area where people are not working, and you can put, you know, jobs that pay pretty well within walking distance or short bus rides from a whole lot of homes, that could work really well.
The neighborhood has been allowed to degrade.
Because you could be tapping into a different kind of work ethic than the kind of work ethic that so many businesses are struggling to deal with now.
The former steel mill was picked to host a multi-billion dollar quantum development park anchored by Silicon Valley startup PCI Quantum, which pledges 150 jobs. Neighbors want to ensure they benefit from the massive project. Well, they must just be a piece of the place, because you look at the size of it, it's way more than 150 jobs. But we're talking about an area that...
If they're talking about tech development, then they're not talking about hiring out of the neighborhood.
Well, yeah, and it's...
And they, you know, because the neighborhood has not gotten the training, the education that they need for
thriving
tech businesses.
I think the housing stack has been allowed to degrade. The only thing, well, not the only thing, a lot of things Chicago does have, though, is you're right near the University of Chicago. And by the way, you're right near the lake. A lot of beaches down there. I mean, it's not, and you have real serious public transportation with the IC and so forth. You can get downtown really. So there is an infrastructure in Chicago that, you know, they can support some of this stuff, Kevin, because it did. But the houses, I don't think they maybe put a roof on one of them in 35 years, you know, unless it was leaking. You know, the whole neighborhood, it just doesn't. I guess what I'm trying to do here is we've talked this week a lot about what happens in an area like yours, or what happens where, you know, my nephew works for a smaller metal stamping plant, and all of a sudden a lot of people get a lot of orders, and then you try and scramble and hire three or four people if you can, and maybe you expand a little bit, and you got to be careful that you don't expand too much, because if the orders go down, what do you do with everybody? And there's those kinds of entrepreneurial stuff that the listeners and the contributors to the show can all sort of understand. But the thing that's making me nervous, Kevin, is this part above. Now, what are these guys, how does a city like Chicago or any place, not just attract, but by meaning buy or steal, how does somebody like that say, wow, the SouthWorks looks like it's pretty cheap, I can get some pretty good financing on my own, and by the way, I'll lease it from the city, must own it. I mean, SouthWorks just, I mean, whatever, U.S. Steel just abandoned it, I think. I mean, that's another good question. Who actually owns the place? That's probably a John Flanagan question. Who owns these places that are just abandoned? I mean, I don't know. I have no idea. In remanufacturing on the south side, a lot of these places, I point to that, used to be a factory. Do they retain ownership, or do they just dash, or do they sell it to somebody for a buck? I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's a John question for Monday. But now, at this level, can anybody else compete? If I don't have the, you know, the TIF funds, if I don't have this, if I don't have the state telling me that the taxes that the people pay in my place go to me, and at what point does this become amazingly unfair for the next guy? So if you don't have it, you can't even begin to do anything. I mean, there's levels of stuff here that I don't think any of these people are walking through any of this stuff, Kevin. I don't know. It'd be a big study, wouldn't it?
I would very much like to see the plan. You know, a lot of detail behind the plan before trying to even begin to form an opinion of, you know, will it work and is it a worthwhile investment? It very much can be, but I think you're right. I think it's really you're better off dealing in general. You're better off dealing with the the more entrepreneurial type of startups. Because, they really are the ones who get committed to where they live, where their operations are, I think the big businesses are a lot colder. They're going to be the ones who are more inclined to say we need redevelopment. We need to develop all kinds of higher end properties so that we can attract the talent that we need and so on. You know, we need people who want to hire workers, and who want to hire people who want access to people who really want to be there, people who want to really make a big step up in how their lives shape up, and that requires some not necessarily really high skilled jobs, but jobs in industries that pay very well.
Well, I agree. I just this idea of states competing, and this is sort of weird. I sound a lot like I'm not Mr. Competitive. Hey, I spent 20 years on the trading floor. Nobody gets any more competitive than me, Kevin. I mean, everybody had a spot. Right? You couldn't buy a spot. Everybody had to compete with everybody else. It didn't matter how big you were or whatever. You had to do the same thing. But this idea of constantly somebody, the competition is getting a better nudge from government. It's almost like you get different rules to play than somebody else. I mean, I get four strikes and the other guy gets three. Okay, well, that's kind of interesting. That's not really how you play baseball or softball.
Yeah, so Suzuki only gets two.
Yeah, you know, so yeah. So I mean, at some point, this blows. I mean, I'm not saying this is a bad deal because the SouthWorks thing has been, and I don't know, Pritzker might have just given them everything that everybody else could get if they asked them, you know, or I mean, I don't like I say, I don't know the deal, but this idea that, you know, we're going to buy, I mean, Chicago has lost a lot of the financial industry to Miami. Okay, and from what I understand, years ago there was a big seminar down there, and the mayor went from basically exchange to exchange booth and big company and said, come on down here, I'll cut you a deal. Well, you know, Kevin, I remember the part in the Bible about, you know, the guy working all day, and then the guy came up later and he got paid the same amount. You know, God said, it's not your job to bitch. But you know what? On one day, I don't have a problem with it, but it's every day in a row that somebody works 4 hours for the same thing I'm working eight. And I'm not so sure even the big guy upstairs would go for that, do you? Just saying.
Yeah, well, you kind of tend to believe what you can negotiate is what you get.
So. Well, but you know, but I'm saying it doesn't. If the ground isn't somewhat even, what are you going to? You're not going to get any big firm to go anywhere unless they, you know, they suck the behind of the governor for 6 weeks beforehand. I mean, that's not right. I mean, I don't know if this is one of those deals, but that's
not right. You have to be able to pay your way. I mean, that's a pretty simple concept when it gets right down to it. Is, you know, am I doing this? You know, am I subsidizing another business just to have it? Am I subsidizing another business because it's part of a different agenda other than a good economic base, that it's a viable business? Or am I subsidizing a business because it's part of my, oh, say, a green agenda, like we do so much? How much money have we wasted on that?
God knows. You
know,
yeah.
With just because, you know, we look at some of these businesses and we say, well, that sounds really neat and like something that's really what I want to see happen. What are we seeing with electric cars right now?
Well, I agree.
And what are we seeing with the toll that's taking on companies like Ford and GM, who got suckered in on all of the subsidies, and now they can't sell the electric vehicles, and they're not making enough of the other vehicles to either price it quantity properly or to sell enough of them to do really well. So now we're starting, and we're seeing on top of that, we're in an economy with repo rates that are way up. They're like 25%.
Oh yeah, it's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, look at the price of the cars. I mean, duh.
Yeah, we went and tried artificially to reorient an industry around something that doesn't even make economic sense. It doesn't, you know, the math doesn't work, and then wonder why the industry's hurting now. Well, we completely gorped it up. So, you look at things case by case. You look at whether it's a genuine opportunity to do some serious economic redevelopment. But in the end, what we find is that when the government gets involved, it just really tends to screw things up.
Well, I don't yet. I'm not a massive fan of Pritzker, but I think the guy actually knows finances pretty well. Well, he's got some money from the state, but the state fiscally looks a hell of a lot better when he got there. Now, some of that's COVID money, blah blah blah. But I guess it is possible.
Hey, if he reshaped the budget and used took the opportunity of the COVID money to get some strong footing, good for him. If he just spent the COVID money and the budget's going to suck in 2 years,
I don't know. I don't know the detail.
Problem, and but, I don't know the answer.
But I'm saying you and I, even though we have this issue against essentially handouts, I'm going to say that if there is a situation like this SelfWorks, like I say, it's been empty for, Kevin, this has to be what, the 10th plan that's been floated, right? None of the other ones ever went anywhere. If nobody really owns it, and somebody says, I can do that, I don't know that you don't, since nobody owns it anyway, I mean, what's the point? Would you cut, if you were to say, wow, how many of these jobs would be from Northwestern University of Chicago, UIC, maybe kids that are leaving the city now to go get these high-tech jobs. And oh, by the way, we've got like nobody in CVS these days, which probably holds 2,000 students. And how many of the jobs here are not super high-tech? We don't need a PhD. That maybe we could do some training in the high school, and some of these people might get, if you choreographed it all together and said at the end of the day, by the way, you're going to pay taxes like everybody else, and all those kinds of things, could you pull that crap together and be a real good thing? I think so. You know, it's not like I'd give up on it. I just don't want the thing to just be a massive handout with Texas giving you what, we'll give you more, that kind of thing.
I totally agree with you.
I mean, it doesn't. Somewhere, someplace, somebody has to start the ball, prime the pump in the city of Chicago on the south side. It was an amazing manufacturing and business place, great place to live, a lot of parks. Now it's, you know, it's not nothing like that.
And access, for what it's worth, access to Great Lakes shipping, which is, you know, which is useful. It's not it's not a primary distribution mode, but it's useful in some industries and for some products, but also a lot of access to freight rail, which is a big deal. You know, I don't know if we make, for air freight very useful, very accessible from the southeast side. I don't know if I'd call it, I don't know if I'd go that far as to say it, but again, that's not the biggest thing. It's really trucking and rail. And so as far as the distribution side of the equation goes, you know, how are we looking there? Well, trucking's not half bad. You know, it's, you've got your Chicago congestion that a lot of the shippers like to avoid, but being on the southeast side, you can pretty easily get onto the I-80, I-90 type of system, and then get out of town. So, I think the area itself has some possibilities. It's just a matter of will they pull it off, and will they pull it off effectively?
Well, and I think that you look around. I mean, one of the things that we zero in on, you know, this environmental friendly stuff, and electronic this and electric that. Why do we totally forget, essentially moving people by streetcars and stuff, like the systems used to be, that actually were very energy efficient, and by the way, pretty darn nice, and didn't take up a whole lot of space. I mean, you know. The biggest.
Well, or why do we, why do we ignore natural gas, which is a much cleaner burn? Do what it takes to be, economically sound. I'm all in favor of, a cleaner planet and anything we can do to make that happen, or not anything, but what we can do to make that happen efficiently. But also, some common sense about how much can you conceivably move the needle. With some of these initiatives, they're so economically unsound, and destructive to entire industries, and destructive to the federal and state budgets, and so just some common sense would be really sweet.
You just wonder if everything is crooked, Kevin. I had a message yesterday from one of our listeners and a friend of mine. He's vacationing in Greece. And he's a real observant dude, right? A lot of people are, and he is. And he was talking to some people. I guess he speaks Greek. Obviously, I think he does. He says, "Well, if you speak the language, after a while, people will kind of confide in you, which is, people get to know you, and you're willing to listen to what their issues are. People will talk to you, right? I mean, that's how Roosevelt became." As brilliant as he was, he listened to people. The guy was telling me about how there's this coal plant over there. Their energy prices keep going up, and evidently inflation in Greece is really high. When I say that, it's sort of like Japan. Sort of like last night, I mentioned this, and guys, what do you mean? Japan's had deflation for years. They may have deflation on their the yen and those kinds of things, but the fact is. The regular people, everybody I know that was going over there and telling me, the regular people, the prices might be up 5% and their salaries up 1 or none. It's like here. There may be this overall, like here, we're going to tell everybody there's no inflation. I'm sure today with this, the Fed number coming out. But there is. there's the word on the ground and then there's the word, right? But he was telling me this coal plant was supposed to be, by EU standards, closed in 2030. But they're closing it this year, even though Greece has problems with power production, I guess. And, of course, the backdrop of it is whatever's going in there, some new something, is somebody who's, in part of the government, some lady part of the government, who happens to be married to a guy from Goldman Sachs or something. Kevin, you can't write this script, can you? I mean,
same people, they find their way, you know, it's just so insidious, they find their way into everything.
How can we, I don't want Ricardo to start doing the, you know, Andy and Mayberry theme, but I really believe, Kevin, from what I remember, and the more I try and think back, the difference in people's mentality when, in the 20 years after World War II or 25, when pretty much everybody was involved in that effort, one way or another, there was a certain amount of respect for person to person, and there was a certain amount of honesty. I mean, not that, you know, firms, I mean, hell, people were pumping and dumping in the market in the 20s, so it's not like people weren't always crooks. There weren't always people that were dying to be different than everybody else. I mean, that's, I guess, unfortunately, part of human nature. But I mean, the general, every single time you look at something, left, right, whatever it is, there seems like there's some story behind it. Is there any such thing as a legitimate bid for any? I mean, is there always somebody behind?
Tom, I'm not so sure that it was, you know, way better or any, you know, in terms of the integrity of all of this kind of deal making that goes on. I mean, remember, we had to, there was a reason they were writing antitrust laws. There was a reason for all of that. There's two big differences. One is obviously the just ubiquitous nature of the news, and that there's reporting of all kinds, BS stuff as well as good stuff. As I just said to somebody yesterday, you know, the internet is about 99% crap.
Oh yeah.
But it's so big that the 1% of good stuff is pretty substantial. So there's a lot out there that's available to all of us. But the point is that we at least did provided people with basic education.
Yep.
So you know, a lot of us could, you know, a lot more people could just look at a situation, look at something, and be conversant, form an opinion, and be in a position to recognize and call out the scoundrels. And now I think that's the part that's lost, is our system of educating people is so bad that we just kind of go along. It's almost the idiocracy model.
Well, I remember
almost it is the idiocracy model.
Well, I remember my family. My mother was the second youngest, and she never got a chance to go to college, which my grandfather, to his dying day, said was his biggest. He should have found a way, but because she was valedictorian in high school. But her older brothers, I don't think any of them passed 16 in high school. Yet, if you talk to any one of them, you'd swear they had a college degree. Every one of them was amazingly well read. If you named a book, they read it a month ago. I mean, one guy was a tool and die maker, and which is serious stuff. He put printing presses together for the Tribune, and they were not. And I remember reading something in that Quora, where the question was, did Winston Churchill think that Harry Truman was an idiot? Because Winston Churchill was amazingly well educated and amazingly well read and world traveler and a whole bit, and the answer was hell no. I said, people forget how a 1920s or 30s education, even in a rural area, how much people they all knew how to read, they all knew how to add and subtract. And if you wanted to go further, I said Harry Truman was one of the most well read people of his generation. He was easily maybe not quite on a par with Churchill, but Churchill, he didn't back down, and he was from Missouri, for God's sake. You know, I mean, you learned enough to where if you wanted to keep learning, you kept learning. You know, and you kept reading and you kept doing stuff. And I don't know that, you know, not everybody, I'm sure, came out of the same school he did in Missouri. Some people probably went back to the farm and never read a book again the rest of their life. But the thing of it is, the people you talk to, they weren't idiots, Kevin. I mean, people I worked at Pullman, a lot of those guys were in the Army. They were doing something. You talk to them, they knew their jobs. They were their offices loaded with books. They're always reading something. I don't know, maybe just the people I ran into. Maybe that's the problem. My sample's wrong. But I don't see, I mean, I when I see this presidential campaign, and I just wonder if either one of them is intellectually not, you know,
Not that they're idiots, they're not. Intellectually, the background is up for the job. I mean, can either one of them get a list tomorrow of 90 bazillion things, land on their desk, and start going through them one at a time and make a decision? I don't know that either one of them has that background, Kevin. And to me, out of 330 million people in the country, somebody in that spot should have that background.
I think most longtime CEOs have that ability. Whether you like the decisions or not might be and trust the judgment is another issue. But in that case, you know, if you've sort of been living in CEO land for a long time, getting a myriad of issues thrown at you and having to it provide either guidance or full decisions on issues is part of the job.
We got a dash, Kevin, but you and Dan, I think, and me, we're the people we run into that run their own brokerage firm, that run their own trading firm on the floor. It's their dough, and they come from a group. They probably did it themselves. You're right. The people Dan talks to when he goes around looking for mid-sized bond companies with bonds and so forth, and the people you run into that are requesting, people that you have trained or your school has trained for their place. I think you're getting a sample. I saw people at Pullman, and I saw people in this industry that like work for First Op and places like that, came in from God knows where, and I wonder how the hell they got the job. And they didn't do anything the whole time they were there. I would never have gone to them for a decision. I don't know how they landed there.
I understand that, but I worked for several CEOs as the direct report to them. And so I have a pretty good feeling for what their work days, work weeks, etc., are like. There is a lot of decision making, a lot of evaluation, a whole lot of stuff that goes into that job. I think Carl is listening in. I think Carl would tell you the same about his days as a CEO. That there's so much to it, so I wouldn't discount that.
Well, I'm not. I'm just saying
skill as an important skill in the presidency. What I would say is then it gets down to judgment. It gets down to, and I've had CEOs that I have known and worked with very closely that I respect and don't respect, but I'll also tell you that that you can't hold that job for any period of time without having stuff come at you from 16 different directions at the same time and have to balance it all out. It's just not there. It's impossible to have done it.
Well, I agree. I just always got the feeling that my guy at Allied Van Lines, my first job, I ended up doing about a lot of special reports for the VP guy. Boy, he was one hell of a handball player, too. I mean, he kicked my ass every time. Big, strong Polish guy. But he would sit there, and the first time he got a report from somebody, or maybe the second and third time, he would read through it and do all the addition, make sure that he could trust that person. And once he did, I remember he was in a board meeting, and a guy says, "Well, yeah, do you believe those numbers?" He goes, "Hey, Tom did them. They're right." Look at the guy goes, "Okay." But I mean, he didn't just do that without adding them up the first time. You know what I'm saying? I mean, somehow there's a sense to it. I don't think anybody could read everything that drops on the president's desk. I mean, the guy who was the head of British Secret Service during the war, I mean, he did, because there were people dying all over the place, and he read the equivalent of a Victorian novel a day, but he was that kind of guy, and I don't know how many people are like that, not very many. But someplace, somewhere, if you're in, wherever you are, the Oval Office, another office, you got to read a report from one guy front to back and say, "Does this guy know what he's talking about? Can I believe his crap without going through it line by line?" And you have to develop your people you can trust.
Which means you have to bring in good people.
Yes.
In the first place. You have to be that, which is a very important skill that you learn on the way up, is how to evaluate other people. And then on top of that, you're going to get, like in the presidency, you're going to have a daily briefing. And so you sort of weigh and prioritize, and then you say, "Okay, this one I really have to drill into, so let's have some conversations about that." And that's all process stuff. as to how you get there. Nevertheless, you still have all of this crap coming at you.
Well, you have to have a desire as well, Kevin. I mean, I read a bunch of stuff on Roosevelt. I'm not a genius about the guy. But here's a dude in a wheelchair. He's going nowhere, right? Although I guess he'd have a car he could drive. One of the first ones you could drive without using your legs. I don't know how he did that, but he was pretty much locked in. And he would have a visitor like every half hour all day long. And that's how he learned about the world. But the guy who worked for Hopkins, they were absolutely adamant about going outside the system and getting information to them that was unfiltered by the people around him. That was the whole point of the Winds of War. He wanted Pug Henry to write him letters, not through his boss, not through anybody, when he was the naval attaché in Berlin. The same thing they did with the lady. They told you go around the country and you send us letters back about how bad it is in all these states, how bad is this depression really. They didn't trust the people who walked in and told you what you wanted to hear. They did everything they possibly could to get another whole side of the news from people they could trust. I mean, there has to be people tell you stuff, you wonder why they're telling you sometimes, right? Is it for their agenda or yours? They tell you what you want to hear. You got to be real careful about that, but you also have to have So
trust is important. Don't get impressed with people. Don't appoint people to important positions just because someone else recommended them. I look at both candidates like that now and say, my God, they're going to suck at that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, it's SP Futures up 42, NASDAQ Futures up 205. Kevin, is this going to hold? Is this the real buy the dip?
Rally. Here we go.
There you go. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Good morning.
Give us a call about your stock. 888-76-JACKS. That's 888-765-6257. Or email us stocksandjacks@live.com.
Hello and welcome back, Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Ricardo on the board. Just when you think you want to host the Olympics, a bunch of arson attacks and so forth on European rails last night, have them canceling train service for 800,000 people. Yeah, it's the bid outside. SP Futures up 42, NASDAQ Futures up 207, Dow Futures up 240. So we're trying hard here this morning to get going the other way. Over in Asia, see if we have a bounce there or no. Nikkei down 202.5%, 37,663. Hang Seng up 16, 17,022, so barely above 7,000. I'd call that a dead cat bounce. Shanghai, same thing, up 4 points. Let's call that one flat. So not really any. They've had a horrible week over there in some of those markets. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 47, 0.3%. FTSE up 46.5. CAC around up 55.7. That's not much of a bounce there either after the last 2 days. Yesterday, like I said, Dow was actually up 81. S&P down 27, NASDAQ down 160. So after being down, you know, a real, real lot the day before, NASDAQ was down another point yesterday. After being up a couple of times, it looked like we actually were going to bounce. And right near the last hour, yuck, rug came pulled out. Bonds down 2 basis points, 4.23. The Bund up 2 basis points, 2.44. Japan down a penny, down 1 basis point, 1.06. Oil down 34 cents, 77.94. Again, we'll talk to Kevin and Carl about why this oil has fallen. Is it more production, or are we slowing down here? Brent down 39 cents, 81 and 86. Natural gas down a penny, 202. Looks like it's going to go under $2. RBOB unchanged, 246. Gold, which has had a huge spin around to the downside, up a little bit today, but still 23.72, way under the 24.60 it was like 3 days ago. Silver down 6 cents, 27.91. Kind of down in this range where it has been a buy. I don't know if I want to put the toe in the water there, but like I said, it has been a buy there. Doesn't mean it is this time. Copper up a penny, 4.13. And we have a foreign exchange. Euro 108.6, kind of where it was the last few days. And the pound 128.7, sort of the same thing. Bitcoin up 2,400 with big bounce there, 67,233. For some reason, Bitcoin's gotten itself involved with being the Trump trade. Or if he wins, it's going to be a big plus for Bitcoin. I don't know where that's coming from, but I don't know that much about Bitcoin. Carter, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Nice day.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:30 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. I'm sorry, 6:45 a.m. here in Chicago. 60 degrees right now with a high of 75 degrees. Very nice today. Hazy, sunshiny tonight. Will be clear with a low of 66 degrees. On to Phoenix, Arizona, 82 degrees right now with a high of 112. Rather cloudy and hot. Heat will be dangerous. Will minimize outdoor activity. Tonight will be partly cloudy with a low of 88 degrees. On to traffic in Chicago. Inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 15 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 30 minutes. We're looking at 19 minutes. Minutes inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 14 minutes, and Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 25 minutes. Lastly, the MLB yesterday, the White Sox lose to the Rangers, and today we got a couple of games. The Cubs play the Royals at 7:10 p.m. in Kansas City, White Sox play the Mariners at 7:10 p.m. in Chicago, and the Diamondbacks play the Pirates at 8:40 p.m. in Phoenix. That's all I got for you, Chief.
Kevin, we've threatened twice now, so why don't we do it? Why don't we talk a little bit about the Major League Baseball draft and how much that has changed. From 1995, where roughly 50% of the people were from high school and college, and now it's up to almost 75 or 80 from college, right? And it's what do you attribute that to? Just more colleges playing better ball, or what?
Well, it's part of it, but they refer to that as the money ball effect, so this goes back to Billy Beane's approach to drafting players, for a long time as the only one doing it this way, it really worked for the A's. But now that everybody's onto it, it's no more advantage to them. But what his approach in general was that I know more about a player. I know the player, a more fully formed player at age 21 or 22 than I would know about that same player at age 18 or 17, whenever they draft a guy out of high school, because the high school player is just that has major league ability is so much better than everybody else, that guy just goes up and hits and performs and does everything. But you don't know anything about play discipline. You don't know anything about even things like work ethic and the like that are part of the equation. But by the time you see a player 3 years later or 4 years later, you have a much better insight into the player, and so it's a much safer bet to choose them. That's the big change. To the extent that it has worked, I think in many cases it has. If you were to look at some of the rosters, the guys that you bring in who did not go to college, certainly there are some great players that fit that mold. I'll take a quick look while I talk about some of them. As far as I'm concerned, as good a player that has come up through the system as there is Juan Soto. So let me look at him on Baseball Reference, because I do not know his background.
Kerry Wood.
Yeah, Kerry Wood, but Kerry Wood came up out of high school. Juan Soto.
Can you imagine batting against that guy in high school?
No. I did hit against a major league pitcher or two, and some really high prospects too. Soto was from the Dominican Republic, where people are noted to be free swingers and undisciplined at the plate, and yet he is an extraordinarily disciplined hitter. and an absolutely great basketball player or baseball player. I used to say he was the player that you always wanted Javier Baez to be.
Yeah, yeah.
And
you know what they say, you can't walk off the rack, you got to hit.
Well, you got to hit, but you got to get on base. You can't swing at crap. You can't be swinging at every pitch up there. That would be the beef with Christopher Morel on the Cubs. Whereas Soto, if you look at him, he gets on base, you know, his on base percentage is .435. he's already this year, he's already walked 82 times to go with 114 base hits.
Well, how much of it is do you think is just purely money? I mean, what do you suppose?
The point of drafting the college players is that by then you have a pretty good idea if a guy's a disciplined hitter or not. That would be one example. Whereas coming out of high school, you don't know that.
Well, you also have to. What do you suppose I believe that everybody in the minor league is the same salary, right? It's a question of the bonus. I think that used to be the thing, that everybody in AAA gets the same check a week.
Well, sort of yes and sort of no, because what was the guy? David Bote on the Cubs has been earning, you know, when they did a contract extension with him a few years ago, and then he ultimately spent two straight years in the minors, he was getting paid millions of dollars for that.
I think it's somehow it's broken up, though, Kevin. I don't know what – if you get a bonus or something – Lou probably knows more about this than me. But the paycheck, I think, is sort of the same. That maybe the minor league club pays the paycheck or something, and there's some screwy way about it. But it's kind of all about the bonus you get and those kinds of things. But I guess, what do you suppose if you draft a kid out of high school, so he's 17, 18, and say he comes up 3 years later, three or four, what do you suppose the total cost of the average guy, you know, room and board and bus rides and all the other crap for, are you going to get some of that back because he's performing, the minor league team, like the South Bend Cubs, they're probably okay, but the major league club is paying the guy's salary, paying for the managers. What do you suppose that total cost to them is?
Oh, it's very high. Now, nevertheless, Tom, though, like most college players go into Class A. They still most of the time come out a few years away from the major leagues if they're going to make it. So, you know, they'll go to Class A, they'll work their way through the system. Now, they may do it a little faster than the typical.
Well, you would hope they're two or three years faster, for God's sake. They've been playing for two or three years.
Well, yeah, the other guys you're going to get, you know, they're going to go rookie league, and then, you know, you may send your college players to rookie ball, but most of the time they're going to go to your low Class A, then they're going to move up to the higher level Class A, then they're going to move up to double A, and so on. So there's still a substantial investment. Yes, they've offloaded some of that investment to the college level, but not all of it.
Yeah, I mean, I just wonder how much of it's money and how much of it. But you know, this article you sent me on the score, it's pretty interesting. You sent me two articles. You sent me the one with the score, and you sent me the one about pitchers and why they're so injured. Take a look at this. There's a picture here of the Athletic. This is all about, the score is about the billy ball that Kevin's talking about 20 years later. This kid, Joe Blanton, is pitching here. And they got him right in the middle of his motion. And I'm going to say this guy's a walk-in Tommy John surgery. Duh. I mentioned this before. There was a guy that somehow or another, I don't know what he was, Kevin. He must have been some kind of doctor. But he didn't just write about people. He wrote about animals, too. Had to do with different things that people think. You know, he did a thing on sprinting. And somehow the Tribune, back when it was a real paper, maybe once every couple of months would give them the entire back page of the sports section, which is a lot of words, right? I mean, a whole page and what the size of the Tribune used to be. And he did a thing on pitching. And it had to do with, you know, the overhead motion is and all that. You know, he said, if you do it exactly right, it's not a problem. He goes, just nobody does. He said, when you head for the plate, Your foot should be pointed right at the plate. You should be able to draw a straight line from the, if you're right-handed, from the right hand in the middle of the throwing motion, right through both shoulder blades, right through your other hand, all the way to the bottom. It would be an absolute straight line from your right index finger to your left. And if you do that, everything is going the same direction, everything's going the same motion, you're using almost all body. He said if you're under that, you wreck your elbow. If you're over that, you wreck your shoulder. And he predicted a couple of pitchers, Oral Hershiser and some other guy. Sure enough, the next year, Hershiser had what? The shoulder, elbow surgery, the other guy had the shoulder surgery.
Yeah, and tying that back to the draft, so many of the power pitchers have had those surgeries that at least when you draft a college player, he's usually had it already.
Yeah, somebody else paid for it. Yeah.
And somebody else handled the rehab part of it too.
Well, you're also teaching kids to throw.
Cade Horton, I think, it would be an example of that. One of the Cubs' top prospects is, you know, he had surgery and then came back from it already. And so, you know, that would be an example there. But I think that's the interesting part about the pitchers, though. And if you think back to the 1960s and when the Mets brought up all of those pitchers, Tom Seaver and Nolan Ryan and so on, they all had really long careers. They all had the same mechanics, and it was all the perfect mechanics. And
yep.
a lot of what they did was they got a lot of their power out of their legs as well. And in fact, you know, the thing that people always commented on was they got so much push off of their legs that all of the Mets pitchers had, you know, their right knee, if they were right-handed pitchers, the right knee, the push knee, would be all dirty from the mound because they'd get so much push on it that knee would land on the mound. That was the, you know, they were known for the mechanics of their pitchers, and they all had long careers.
Well, Fergie Jenkins used to pitch batting practice between starts, keep loose.
I'm trying to re-envision Fergie Jenkins' pitching motion there. In comparison to that, I'd go back and pull up some old videos of it. And
well,
see
plus they got these kids throwing this big guy, Larry Little. That's his first name. What's his first name? Larry Little was a guard, the big lefty, big huge guy. He's out for the year. These guys come in, and every single pitch against Mickey DeMolp is a max effort pitch. You don't need to do that. Rick Rushel came back. They said, "Can you still throw it?" He goes, "I can still throw it 95." Five times a game. I just got to pick my spots. Because I don't have to throw 95 to get most of these mopes out, right?
Yeah, and Luke Little's the guy you're trying to remember.
Well, the other kid. What's the other kid's name? Is Brown, the kid who came up and had two really good appearances. Now he's out too.
Yeah,
right,
Ben Brown. Yeah. So you're looking at these guys. I think a lot of what they do with them is abusive. If you want to do max effort, then you're going to have to severely limit the innings, which they do now anyway. They tend to limit guys. They aim at pitch count, but maybe the wiser thing is, you just can't have enough pitchers to do it. But if max effort's what you're going to do, then you probably better be holding guys to more like three innings. The problem is, to field a team, if you're gonna do that as a pitching style, you probably have to expand the roster to 30 so that you can get enough pitchers to do it and still maintain the rest between starts. Because I would maintain that six innings without doing max effort constantly is no more of a burden on a guy than three innings going at max effort. So you need the same amount of rest either way.
Well, some of these relief pitchers, they come in and they throw 20 pitches, 100 miles an hour. That's more than people used to do in two games.
Yeah, and they need a day off now.
Yeah.
So it will be interesting to see if there's anybody out there that tries to build a staff of pitchers who know how to pitch anymore. Is there going to be anybody who's going to try and build a staff of Kyle Hendricks from a few years ago? Staff with a Shota Imanaga, who knows the craft of pitching. It'll be interesting to see if more of those guys start to make their comeback for all of the reasons that we're discussing.
Well, they're going to have to because all the other guys are hurt.
Yeah, well, say yeah, somebody's got to pitch.
Who's the Notre Dame coach, the baseball coach? One of my buddies was there for one of these. His kid's on a traveling team, so the Irish that area hosted all these kids for, you know, they're all probably, I don't know if they're high school age or just before that. They must be 90 feet because they're playing on the fields there, so they got to be at least, what, 15 or something. So the coach is taking them all around, showing the facility. Evidently, they got amazing facilities there. And he was, you know, it sounded like a little bit of a pompous dude, but I wasn't there. He was talking about, you know, if your kid can't throw over 90, I don't even want him. Okay, so he's gonna turn away Greg Maddux. Okay, then. Of course, Greg Maddux was 91, 92, but remember the other famous coach, the guy from what's the field name after? What's his name? Baseball field.
Jake Klein.
Jake Klein, you know what his claim to fame was?
Yeah, he didn't think Carl Yastrzemski was very good.
He said, yeah, but you'll never make a ball player. Well, there's an eye for talent. Anyway, so Kevin, we have a lot of stuff going on in the markets. We have, I don't know if anybody can put their finger in the difference in economic policy between the two candidates, now that we know who the two candidates are, or I'm 99% sure we know who they are. When I say that there probably would be if you sat them down, but with the box we've got ourselves in, how can there be? I mean, somehow or another, we got to close the budget gap. Somehow or another, we got to deal with the costs that are killing everybody, which is the medical and drug costs. And we got to figure out a way to spruce up the military because we seem to be hot spots all over the place. I mean, I don't know. No matter who you are, those are the problems, right?
Those are some of the problems.
Some of the problems. Oh, yeah. But I mean, well, maybe that's the top few. I mean, you can't continue to do everything if you're broke. So you got to find a way to deal with that, right? And medical parts seem to be the part that's astray the most. And God help you if all of a sudden these interest rates go up, right? Then you're really screwed. But it, you know, there's a list of stuff. But I mean, you know, I don't know that somebody has the independence that you would think you would have if the budget was under control. If we didn't have the military hotspots, if we didn't have a lot of the medical stuff, if we didn't have the border stuff, if we didn't have a lot of other places in the world falling apart, so people are running all over the damn world. I mean, it's a big soup bowl of stuff, right? That I'm not so sure that the problems, the solutions seem to be, you know, almost doesn't matter who's in there. The solutions are the same. You got to spend less, get more. I mean, right? Somehow.
Well, I tell you what is the candidate who will earn my vote. You know, getting my vote is a different issue, but the one who will earn my vote will be the one who comes in and says, here's our plan for the next 10 years. You know, it puts us on a path step by step to get there so that we don't have to take the big shock right now, that it is going to curb, you know, it is just going to curb spending like crazy in all the stupid areas. It's going to address how we deal with healthcare right now. And the guy you're going to have on next has a lot of great ideas for that. And you know how I feel, yep, about how we do some of the payments for it, but it needs to be market driven. And so I have some thoughts on that that we could do another time because it would be a deep dive. But it's not just healthcare, it's all of it. And we have to get on a path to it, and it has to be a path that is going to last for, you know, it's not going to lurch back and forth every time we get a new administration. I don't think we can pull that off effectively, no, but that's what has to happen.
If you're waiting for that, I think you're spending election night with me, the Tripoli Tap.
Well, I could do that, though.
Anyway.
That could work for me.
Kevin, have a nice weekend, buddy. SP Futures up 46, NASDAQ Futures up 218. Real quick break. My name is Carl Deninger.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Money.
Blowing up X, Tax, and Jacks. I'm Tom Al. Ricardo on the board. SP Futures up 46. NASDAQ Futures up 220. This is kind of what the, almost all what we lost in the last half hour as we looked like we were rallying a couple times yesterday. Then knew, sorry, Lucy, pull the rug out from under that. Now, Carl, I'm sure, sold that rally, and now he's bought on the low, and now he's long spoo.
You know, it's funny you raise that specifically. It's actually very amusing.
Well, because you did it large?
Well, I looked at the close yesterday and was very, very close to buying futures. And obviously, looking at it this morning, that would have been a good decision, right?
Yeah. Is this one going to hold, or are we going to yank it again?
Well, short-term stuff, you look at charts, right? Long-term stuff, you look at facts. But short-term stuff, you look at charts, you look at momentum, you look at, you know, you look at what people are doing, right? Because, I mean, that's, you know, it's the old Buffett thing. In the short term, it's a sentiment thing. In the longer term, it's a voting box.
Yeah.
Right. I did not, so I'm sitting here flat this morning in terms of spoos. But if you think I'm chasing it up 47 handles, you're no, I'm not. but what I thought was interesting about the last few days is that is what set this off, which to me was maybe the most important element out of what we've seen lately. And it points to something I've been talking about for a while, and I think people had better pay attention to it, because coming into a political season, everyone loves to say nothing terrible is going to happen, you know, because there's an election coming, right? And they'll keep all the plates in the air. Well,
how about 2008?
I was going to say, yeah. that was exactly my point, is that, I've heard that a bunch of times, and it worked out real well in 08. So I would be a little careful. But what set this off, and you know what? Every now and then I have to turn on the stream for CNBS, because you just have to chuckle at some of the things that they come up with. You know, oh, it's the yen. That was the one that I kept hearing. It's the yen. It's Japan. No, it wasn't the yen. It was callers on conference calls the last few days asking the question that I've been asking now for the last year and a half, which is that all the world's in AI. Everybody uses that in their conference calls because it's good for an instant 3 or 4% pop in your stock price in the after hours.
Let's think about doing that for PTI. AI.
AI, that's all you got to say is you just use the word AI in your, you know, in your conference call and in your press release for your earnings, and your stock will go up. But I actually listened to a couple of those calls, and the question was, okay, you are going to spend however many billions of dollars, so you say, on AI. When are you going to see revenue?
Never.
Sputter, sputter, sputter. Never. Spit, spit, spit. Chuckle, chuckle, chuckle. And the stock gets hammered because, wait, you said you were going to spend $1 billion, but you're not going to make anything. Well, that sounds stupid, right? I mean, even a 3-year-old could figure that one out. And oops, all of a sudden there's a large move in the other direction, which, by the way, wasn't company local. It, you got Google out, and all of a sudden, whammo, it takes the whole sector down. Okay, NVIDIA gets hit, and then on top of that, you have this whole, you know, the whole CrowdStrike thing, which that's an entire sector of business that, from a public company perspective, shouldn't exist. Okay, I'm not saying that there isn't a need for that kind of product at some level, because in certain places maybe there is, but certainly not the way it's been sold and not the way it's been done. And it's a sector that's a hundredth of its present size in a rational marketplace with a rational set of IT actors that actually know how to do their job. Okay, but that's not the world we live in today. And the idea, you know, Chief, the thing that boggles my mind with this, both in the AI area and in this whole thing that happened with CrowdStrike, the idea that a check stand at Home Depot has a threat mitigation software component on it that, you know, when something goes wrong with it, it blows up and takes the machine, you know, every check stand in the store down. The idea that you built a system that has any substantive use for that at that place within the enterprise ought to tell you something about the internal lack of efficiency within those companies. And it's across the entire economy.
Okay,
but right, it's not. Right. That's the problem. It's not that it's in one place, okay, or that, you know, that this incident happened, because there's always bugs in software. There are always going to be bugs in software. Humans write software, and you know, the latest wunderkind thing among so-called experts in the field is that we all should be using memory-safe languages like Rust and da 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 da. You know what? I've heard this argument ever since I've been in the business. It literally goes back, you know, 30, 40 years. Okay, there was same arguments were made for ADA, which was a DOD mandate that showed up out of the middle of nowhere for the same sort of reasons. And I come back to what I've always said, which is that, hey, you know what, in 1969, we put guys on the moon without any of this stuff because there was no computer support for it in the actual computer. There was no way to do it, given the technology of the day. And the people who wrote that code knew full well that if they screwed up, everybody on board that capsule was dead.
Okay, what is the connection? Why does the checkout thing have to be connected? Is it because of the credit card use, or is it because of...
No, you know what? You know what? That's so stupid. This is what people will try to tell you, all right? What it comes down to is this. Your checkout stand has to be able to talk to a credit card processor because everybody uses a credit card, right?
Okay. Right. And they also send me an email right away that this is what I bought. Here's my receipt. Is that, well, that part of it,
okay,
too?
Okay.
I'm just asking. I don't know.
Okay, all right. So it does. All right. That's a perfectly legitimate business decision and business function. There's no, I mean, you're going to take the cards, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a connection to a endpoint, one endpoint that can be gated through a machine at the corner, you know, at the edge of the store, if you will. Okay. And the bandwidth and traffic level required to do that is trivially small. Ridiculously small. In fact, an entire Walmart could pass all of that credit card data through a $25 Raspberry Pi and have, you know, 99% of its capability left over. Right? A computer literally the size of a pack of cigarettes, for crying out loud.
Where is... I'm a total neophyte, and I have to assume some of the listeners are as dumb as me on this. Where is my credit card thing held? At Home Depot in Alabama? Where the hell? I mean, is it held on the store? Where is it? Isn't it? I mean,
well, it shouldn't be held at all. If you're swiping it at the terminal, it's not held at all.
Yeah, but they know right away that what my email is and everything, my history.
Well, that's because you were asked for it at some point in the past, and you put it in.
Okay.
And so they link that. So what happens is, and the reason that works, I mean, you know, I get them from Lowe's and Home Depot if I shop in there. And, you know, you can say, well, you know, email me my receipt, right?
Well, if they gave me a receipt, they wouldn't disappear. The ink wouldn't disappear after 3 months. I wouldn't do it.
Well, yeah. Okay. But the thing is that the reason that they did that is that they asked you for your email at, you know, when you were in the store, the, you know, the first time you used that particular card. And you just match the, you know, okay, there's the card. I've got I don't have the CVV because I don't need it. You're in the store. You physically are present. All right. I've got the card number. I've got the data from the chip. All right. Which is unique. However, it is non-replicable. In other words, I can't use it again without you putting the chip, you know, the card back in the machine. All right. Because there's a cryptographic key initializer in that chip. So I can't replay it. I can't charge you twice, basically, is what the what it comes down to.
Well, that's a good thing.
Well, that's very good. That's the big difference between the stripes on the back and the chip cards, and the as well as proximity read. Okay, is that the keying that is generated is only good once, which is a huge security increase, and it's why in a lot of places.
So you should always insert the thing and use the chip.
Well, most terminals now, the PCI standards, which is what governs, you know, you're taking those as a merchant, will not allow you to take a swipe unless the chip read has failed several times. It's usually three.
Okay.
So the only way that it will actually let you swipe the card, and if you try up front, it will say insert it. Okay. and that's because the companies get really angry about the idea of you know, fraud, cloned cards and stuff, because they eat them.
Yeah.
Right? They're not interested in having that happen. So that's because they get charged back on that, and they will end up swallowing on that deal, and they get very unhappy there. So that's the, you know, that's how that works. But the thing is, there is no reason on God's green earth why the internal machinery that operates your retail establishment or your you know, general business or whatever has to have any other than very specific access to certain places on the internet that are necessary to do certain things, like, for example, process credit cards. Okay, now that's what, you know, nowadays, used to be that you had a Zon terminal that used a phone line, all right, the little boxes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, those are, you know, nowadays, all that connectivity is through the internet because every business in the world has some kind of an internet connection. Okay, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But the network that runs the things that actually operate your business has no reason to have widespread, clean, open access to the internet as a whole. Zero. And this entire nonsense that we have grown an entire so-called industry around putting this stuff at cost, because, of course, you know, they charge for every machine that has this software on it, right? The idea that we've grown an industry around this, instead of CIOs and CEOs and CTOs saying, you know what, that's stupid. We're not doing that. You're out of your effing mind. We don't want our data stolen. We don't want our business destroyed. Okay, leave us. We're the guys. We can detect this stuff and mitigate these threats. Well, how about if I don't leave the effing door unlocked to begin with, so that the guy doesn't come in?
Well, why do some people? Well, some places, like Delta, had a massive problem. Why do some places come back from it quicker? And how does Lottery's Bank, three branches closed and one open? I mean, you would think they're all the same stuff.
Well. Okay, so Delta is a particularly pernicious example of this. Apparently, what happened with Delta, and I don't know anybody inside the company, but I'm spitballing a little bit here, but not as much as you might think. Apparently, Delta was running their crew scheduling on systems that had outside access, which is even more stupid. And as a result, they couldn't get crews and equipment from one place to another because they were down. All right, and
well, that's
and
a problem.
Hello. Yeah. And so, and then you have within larger environments, most of them run on a centralized infrastructure for authentication and credential management, and that is in general a necessary thing because. You know, I work at this desk, but tomorrow, you know, the company needs, especially in case of an airline or any other transportation place, right? You need this agent to be over here in this place or whatever. And so they sit at a different desk. Well, their login has to work there, right? So there has to be a place that does that. And in the Windows world, it's called Active Directory. But if that machine gets hit by something that takes it out, then you're in real trouble because now nobody can sign in. Okay, now when I was running my company, we had a centralized system that did this, not just for our own staff, but also for the customers, because you could sign into your account from one of our Chicago numbers, or if you were traveling, we had service in Milwaukee, So you could be in a hotel in Milwaukee, and this, of course, was in the world of dial-up, right, where you had to call with a modem. Well, you could call a Milwaukee number. And your account worked in Milwaukee. Okay? So there was an infrastructure back there that did that. Well, that machine is the crown jewel of the world, because if that thing's down, nobody logs in.
Well, right? Once you get to the point where, I'll use a simple example, and then we'll wander back to the market here a little bit, but I went to see, you ever go to one of these, what do you call it, the guys that make the ethanol plant? It's like a massive still, right, basically. Yeah. You ever went to one of those? They're fascinating. Anyway, but they got, I don't know how many, we'll say a million, but it's probably not a million. The whole thing is piped, right? There's stuff running all over the place.
Right.
And all the different, you know, things. You could go up there manually and turn the thing, like turn on the hose of your house, but most of them have, you know, they have automatic things that you could go up on a ladder and turn it if you wanted to, I suppose. But they had these two big computer screens, and these two guys sitting there with Packer hats, and they ran everything in the place.
Right.
And the guy said, you got to be here. Now, if all of a sudden he decides, okay, these two guys are working at home with their Packer hats on, and they're hacking through it with their phone or from something at home, are you just opening the door to problems, or what are you doing? Or could it be done securely?
Well, this is part of the we got to placate the green hair kids thing. But there are ways to do that are quite safe as well. I've designed it for firms in the past. It's not impossible. The DoD does it. It does a pretty good job of it, too. And essentially what it comes down to is that if you're going to have people outside the physical facility, you have to make sure that the connectivity to them is secured. That's done with a VPN. That the machines that they are using are and remain secured. And that means not that you put software on to detect threats, but that you lock it down so that there's nothing on there except the things that they use to do their job. Nothing else.
So you really can't do that with a phone, because you do use a phone for everything, or some people do.
Well, you can't do it with a phone, but you can certainly do it with a laptop.
Okay.
But the problem then is,
this laptop would be only for work.
And it's owned by the company, and by God, if you so much as stick a USB thumb drive in one of the slots, your session gets terminated and you're fired, because there could be a keylogger on that supposed thumb drive that records everything that you just did, or potentially injects things, keystrokes, open the valve and blow up the plant, right? Could be on there. And there's no way for you to be absolutely sure it's not. And so you're just not able to do any of those kinds of things. And you're told that right up front. And if you try to circumvent it, you will get caught. And if you are caught, you will be fired. End of conversation.
That way a lot of firms, you know, people went and got, I'll say, better phones. They made people keep their old BlackBerry for company business.
Well, the same thing applies. The same thing does apply to mobile devices, and you know, like a phone. And you know, these days though, we have this convenience model that we basically suffer through with people who have this idea, you know, this whole, oh, well, you can't do that to me. I'm going to sit here. I've got to check my Facebook while I'm at work. Well, no, you don't. And I get the argument that you want to be everything to everybody, right? I get that argument. But you end up with an infrastructure that is inefficient and it's unsafe. And the problem that we're going to have, and this is going to happen, Chief. I don't know when it's going to happen, but I guarantee you it will. There are malicious SOBs that are out there, okay? And as soon as you think you're smarter than everybody else, that's when you get surprised, and not in a good kind of way. There's always somebody, I don't care how good you are, there's always someone better than you are, and there's always someone smarter. Always. And sooner or later, one of those people is going to get something extraordinarily malicious. Not just a crypto locker that, you know, locks you out, they're trying to ransom you. Something that is designed to destroy your enterprise and is deliberately targeted. Well, look at what happened with Stuxnet. Okay, we blew up the Iranian centrifuges with that stuff. Okay, that was a fairly heavily targeted thing at that particular, you know, enterprise, if you will, you know, uranium centrifuges. If you think that there are not people in China and Russia and other parts of the world that would just love to on a generalized basis bend us over the table and use our stupidity against us, you're dead wrong. Those people are out there. They do exist. They would love to do it. They'd get their jollies out of it. And whether they have a geopolitical motive or they're just malicious SOBs doesn't really make any difference.
Well, somebody's hacked into the Chicago area. Somebody's hacked in the car dealerships and evidently somehow got into some of the Secretary of State's offices. They're all connected together.
Yeah, well, see, this is not just in private industry. It's everywhere, okay? The level of insane, well, you know, years ago, look at the OPM thing that happened within the government. Okay, somebody got in the OPM records and stole everything. Well, guess what? If you've ever had any kind of security clearance or anything, you know, any sort of government dealing in that kind of a level, an insane amount of your personal data was in that database. It's gone. It was taken. Now, I know people that work in the area of securing that stuff, or at least used to. They're not anymore. That kind of an intrusion, that was able to happen, given the protocols that are supposed to be there. Well, obviously they were not followed because you know what? No one was ever hammered for that. No one. I never saw any investigation as to who violated the protocols, because I know what those protocols are within that level. I'm well aware of them. There is no way on God's green earth that should have been able to happen. But it did, and it did because somebody did a thing that was not allowed, and they weren't punished for it. They got away with it, and as a result,
we're pretty good at letting everybody go about everything. We're not sure why.
Oh, nobody ever gets hammered for anything. Look, we just had the same. You just had a presidential candidate got shot at, right?
Yeah.
And at the root of it, you got everybody running around with their hair on fire about this and that and the other thing. At the root, the bottom line is that anybody with a fifth grade education could look at that site and say, that is an unacceptable place from a standpoint of threat. But we have to put a guy up there. This has to be covered. Okay? And what we have now discovered is that the reason the guy wasn't on that roof was it was hot.
Oh, really? I didn't see that. I mean, this stuff is kind of dribbling out.
Yeah, that was the bottom line. There was actually a dude that was tasked to be up there.
You know what? I sort of suspected there would have been, but I didn't hear that until you just said it.
Well, you'd be out of your effing mind not to.
Well, the only reason why you would is because all the police are inside. It's like,
well, but that's even more stupid.
Yeah, I know.
Okay,
it's like your car's on the Amber Watch, so you park it in the police lot so they'll never find it.
Well, I'm just saying, there's nobody that does that has ever secured anything and ever thought about physical security would look at that site and not identify that as a place that has to be monitored.
You would think at least the other guys from the other roofs would kind of keep an eye on it.
Well, except there are these things called trees and other buildings that are in the way.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, you kind of try, you do your best, but there's supposed to be somebody there. Because it's an identified threat location, and there was someone tasked. Now, they haven't named who it was that, you know, did the, oh, I'm hot. Well, okay, you know what? You're hot. Guess what? The job
you're
is...
You're also not fired. No, you're not fired.
Yeah, you also didn't get fired, right? But, I mean, there's, you know, or arrested, really. I mean, at a certain point, that kind of thing becomes a criminal negligence problem.
Hey, I got a real quick stupid question for you before we go to break, because then we want to talk markets, and I was fascinated by this Japan debt number the other day, and I'm like, no wonder people here aren't worried about our debt. They're twice as bad as we are, and they're still singing over there. It's doing something. I got this thing in the mail, and now you get all this stuff on the internet all the time about, hey, you charge something something here, if you don't agree with it, like, give us your password and all that stuff, you know. And
right.
I've kind of learned to, you know, ignore that stuff. I got this letter in the mail from a company from like Ticketmaster. They didn't have my first name. They had a second name, unnamed, and then my last name with my right address. And said, by the way, your stuff has been co-opted. Your social, Carl. I have never once. I mean, I guess I've never bought a ticket for Ticketmaster in my life. How do they find me? And how could they possibly have anything that I have? Is it, or unless I mean, I don't buy stuff through there. I never did.
I have no idea, but that you actually got something through the mail is rather interesting.
Yeah, that's what Kevin was saying. He goes, I never heard of that. I actually got to do something, buy a stamp for that.
Well, not just that, but sending anything fraudulent through the mail, that really, I mean, that's traceable. And not only is it traceable, if they figure out who did that, they tend to get really, really angry. So that's email is one thing, but actual physical mail, that's a little surprising.
Yeah, I mean, I was sitting there going, plus they didn't even know if they had all that information about me, how did they not know my first name?
Well, gee, yeah. I think. I mean, you know what I think is so funny is that I get these things in the mail all the time from obvious places that buy lists and, you know, scrape data. That because there are some public records that have, you know, they have my name associated with them, but in a context, they always forget to strip the context because they're not very smart. And so, I mean, just as an example, my home is in an RLT because that's the, you know, that's a good vehicle from a state planning standpoint with your primary residence. Okay, it resolves all problems of who has access to the place, you know, if you get run over by a bus tomorrow morning. And but I get these pieces of mail from, you know, so-and-so trustee.
God.
Okay, I know where you got the mailing list from.
I can't remember, it's been so long ago, but I was doing some expert witness for this big company, and somehow or another they must have decided to vet me somehow, and they sent me a copy of it. I'm sitting there looking at this stuff. I didn't have this information about myself. Well, I guess I did, or I could find it. First, the day I got my driver's license, what grammar school I went to.
Oh, yeah.
Where is that anywhere? You couldn't even find it in my place. I guess you could find an old report card somewhere that my mother might have kept. How would anybody know that I went to St. John Fisher Grammar School? My first car was a 65 Oldsmobile. I mean, that has to come from the Secretary of State. Where else could it be?
Well, yeah, it's...
And their stuff, do they keep it that long?
Well, they might, but somebody else did and now has it. This is one of the, you know, the realities of an information age is that once data makes it into a database without some kind of legal compulsion to actually erase it, not just remove it from public view, but actually delete it and all the backups, which, by the way, is really tough to enforce because how do you disentangle it from everybody else's, right? It never goes away. And it's one of the things that I warned my daughter about when she was young. I said, for the love of God and all that is holy, do not ever put anything in a public place on the internet that, you know, that you might not look back at 20 or 30 years from now and say, oh, crap, right? Because someone will find it and they will use it, and there's absolutely no way you're going to make that go away.
Well, yeah. Hey, S&P, the Fed's key inflation gauge, which nobody can get any of the detail on.
That, yeah, the deflator out of the GDP report.
No, this is the PCE. 2.5% in June from a year ago, in line with expectations. 2.5%, I don't buy it, but anyway. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks. S&P futures up 43, NASDAQ futures up 205. No great movement on that. So that's what we were waiting for. Didn't do anything. We'll be right back.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our Better Business Bureau A-rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Call now for a free case review and a low price guaranteed quote to get you protected today. Call now. 800-388-4901. That's 800-388-4901. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-388-4901.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Well, everyone back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. You got Ricardo on the board. The key inflation gauges is 0.2 month over month versus a 0.1 expected. The yearly came in. We have all these people on CNBC trying to explain this number that you can't get any detail on. I don't know how much time you can spend on that when they won't tell you what the hell's in it. That's just the way the world is. Dow up 267. Individual stocks in the Dow. 3M's up $6. They had earnings. We have everything in it. I don't have... Actually, I do. United Health is down 259. Verizon's down 63 cents. Other than that, every other stock in the Dow is up pre-market. Hence the 270-point move in the futures. We're in Asia. Nikkei down 202.5%. A straight day. Those guys are down. They had a huge rally, but now they've been eight straight days down. Hang Seng up 16. Not much. 17,021. Very, very close to 17,000 number. Shanghai up 4. 28.90. So they're under 2,900. And that bounced back over that today. Over in Europe, these guys were down yesterday. Somewhat of a comeback today. DAX up 83.5%. FTSE up 71.9%. CAC around up 67.9. Again, those guys had arson attacks on some of the rail lines over there, so they've got rail lines shut down this morning affecting 800,000 people on the day the Olympics start. How do you like that one? Not so good. Again, yesterday, the Dow was actually up 81, S&P down 27, NASDAQ down 160. Bonds were down 3 basis points, 4.22. The Bund up 3 basis points, 2.44. Japan down 1 basis point, 106. Oil, which has been continuing to slide here, down 37 cents, 77.91. I'm going to say last Friday, when Kevin and I were doing the show, and Kevin, last Friday or last Thursday, a week ago yesterday, maybe 82, 82 and a half, looking like it was going to bust out to the upside, and now right back down. Brent down 50 cents, 81.87. Natural gas down a penny, 202. RBOB unchanged at 246. Gold up 17.80 after huge sell-off. Wednesday, we were up, I think we were 24.55 or 50, spun like $80 in the next 2 days. I mean, it was really nasty. Silver is still down 15 cents, 27.82. Well, ask Carl if silver is a buy here. Every time it got down here, it has been. Every time it gets over 30, it's a sell. It's a range. It'll be a range until I start trading it, I suppose. A copper unchanged at 4.12. FX, euro pretty much unchanged. We're 108.6 against the euro. And 128.7 against the pound. Those guys are at the high end of their range a little bit here. Yen, however, strongest week in 3 months as some of the carry trades unwind. Okay, we'll find out what those are. Crypto, Bitcoin up $2,400, 67,203. Maybe Carl can give us some education as to why this Bitcoin seems to be somehow attaching itself to the Trump campaign. I don't know why. Carl, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports. No Cubs yesterday.
Morning, Chief. You're right. No Cubs yesterday. It's currently 7:37 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. We're looking at about 64 degrees right now with a high of 79 degrees. Hazy sunshine, but tonight will be clear with a low of 66 degrees. Very nice weather today. Over to Phoenix, Arizona, 80 degrees right now with a high of 112. Rather cloudy and hot. Heat will be dangerous. Minimize outdoor activity if you can. Tonight will be partly cloudy with a low of 88 degrees. Under traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, looking at 21 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 36 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 26 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 16 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 25 minutes. Lastly, the MLB. Yesterday, the White Sox lost to the Rangers 2-1. And today, the Cubs play the Royals at 7:10 p.m. in Kansas City. White Sox play the Mariners at 7:10 p.m. in Chicago. And the Diamondbacks play the Pirates at 8:40 p.m. in Phoenix. That's all I got for you, Chief.
So, Carl, if the Sox lose more games than the 62 Mets, is there going to be a guy on the Sox years later that is on TV, Marv Thornberry, who says, I don't know why they asked me to make this commercial?
Remember well, that? I don't know. I mean, you know, I will say this. In professional sports, when you are a bleep-up, you tend to get fired if you're the manager.
They want a new stadium.
Well, we've got the AA affiliate down here in the Smokies, and they're moving their stadium into Knoxville. I really enjoy going, in large part because I get to see pro ball at a reasonable price. It doesn't cost me $20 for a beer, and the seats are good. And you know, I mean, it's a nice, reasonably inexpensive form of entertainment for the evening. Okay, well, all that's going to go away.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the price is probably going to double, and, you know, parking, everything else. Which is, from my point of view, is extremely sad. Now, if it improves their attendance and they make more money, well, then I guess, you know, economically it makes sense. But isn't that really the story of economics, right? Is that it's about the decisions you make, and hopefully your revenue and your revenue goes up faster than your costs. Therefore, your profit goes up, right?
Except if the world...
Except sometimes it doesn't work like that.
It also sometimes doesn't work like that, and also it... I was going to tell a story about the Toledo Mudhens, but now this is more interesting. If it was Carl and Ricardo Mudhens, like Toledo, and you decided to do that, and you went and bought the property, and you went and built the place, that's the America I know of.
Yeah, but that's not what happens.
That's not what happens now.
Right.
I mean, if all of a sudden the city gives them all the dough, the city does this. One day, this is the weirdest damn thing ever happened. But if you keep your ears open, Carl, as you know, things happen. I was in when I had worked for Pullman way, way long time ago. I had bought some tires from this place in Gary, right? And the people were real nice to me. And one of my biggest faults is I'm the most loyal dude there is, right? So years later, I need some tires. So I call these guys up. Hey, you guys still sell tires? Yeah. So I got a nice price because I think they had balanced them for me for free or something, or fixed the flat for me for free. So I go back and buy some more tires. So I'm sitting there in a waiting room, and it's now a pretty crummy neighborhood. And there's this very well-dressed, real sharp-looking black dude with all these drawings. You know, like drawings of buildings and so forth. There's this other guy sitting next to him, and he goes, hey, Joe, or whatever his name was, you like work with the city, don't you? And he goes, well, yeah. All of a sudden, they start this conversation regarding the stadium that if you take the tollway, it was up when you were still here, take the Anatollway right through downtown Gary, you see this very, very nice minor league baseball stadium. And it's not far enough away from Chicago, I don't think, to be affiliated. So it's one of those ones where they have to do tryouts, and they're in like the league where they sell the contracts to the major leagues. If they get somebody, you don't talk about it. Schaumburg's got a team like that, so does Crestwood. But this stadium is really, really nice in downtown Gary. It was supposed to be something that, you know, put downtown Gary back on the map. So the guy, this African-American gentleman, launches into this story about the stadium, and how the guy who wanted to put it up, instead of just going to the politicians, he went around to all the preachers and gave them dough and said, this is the best thing you need. We got to give us money for the stadium. So they ended up with this groundswell of having to give this guy money for the stadium, which they eventually evidently paid for it in the financing, whatever. And this guy is totally ragged about the place they put it. Evidently, the water table's so low, they have to have constant pumping to keep the water out of the damn thing.
So it doesn't flood.
Yeah, and how the city's all on the tab for running these pumps all the time, and what a total fiasco it is for downtown Gary. And they don't get anywhere near the crowds that they thought they were going to get. So the taxation revenue was like a quarter of what they thought it was supposed to be. But anyway, the Toledo story, I want to see the Toledo Mudhens have always, you know, that's where the coach was in Major Leagues, right? In the movie Major League, that's where he was managing, the Toledo Mudhens, when they went and got him.
Yeah, yeah.
So I go there, there's this gorgeous little minor league stadium, look just like the one in Bull Durham, right? And I go, I could just walk right in on a Tuesday morning. The gates aren't even locked. I'm in there, and I'm sitting in a couple seats, going, man, I really like to watch a game here. I buy myself a hat. Some guy walks up, he goes, hey, how you doing? I start BSing with him. He goes, yeah, man, last year for this place, we got a real nice one going up downtown. I'm going, wait a minute. I just love the place. Now you're telling me you're wrecking it in 6 months? Oh, yeah, I got a new one. There you go.
It's stuff like this. The thing that I think is fascinating is, you know, we spend quite a bit of time on, you know, entire industries being grown out of whole cloth that shouldn't exist, okay? I mean, and the CrowdStrike thing is part of it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you guys remember, but there was a company called Barracuda
Oh, I do. I remember the company. I don't remember what they did. But.
Well, they made an appliance that went between the internet and your internal networks. Now, that's an actually decent model, okay? But the problem, of course, is they can only sell you one of those, right, per building.
Okay.
Well, because you only
per building or per floor? I mean, per company?
Well, no. I mean, you know, if your outside connectivity is one, you know, you have a line coming in from a...
But, I mean, we have a floor in a building. There'd need one for every place, right?
Well, for every business.
Yeah, okay.
Right. But it's one box, okay, that goes in the middle. But if you have 20 computers on the other side of that in your building, or you have 2,000 computers, you still only need one box, right?
Are they even in business?
I don't know. I haven't. I mean, I remember the ads. Okay, at one point I did some contract work for a place that absolutely could not have their internal systems compromised, and it was during a period of time when when Microsoft Outlook was the big thing for email, which for some enterprises still is, but the server that actually served that was called Exchange, which ran on NT, and it was notoriously insecure. And so I was tasked for money to write a front end that ran on a dedicated piece of hardware that sat on a box and made sure that nobody got in there and broke into their, you know, their server. And oh, by the way, this was, you know, around the time frame when Hillary infamously had, you know, somebody break into hers, right? Because she was too stupid to have that kind of front end in front of it. And like I said, I mean, it was notoriously a problem. It was not like it was an unknown thing. It was absolutely, that box should never, ever, ever be directly connected to the internet in any form or fashion, because somebody will break into it. And so, you know, I mean, there certainly are ways to deal with this kind of thing, but we've crafted this entire model that's broken, and we've done it on purpose, and we've done it in so many other areas. Chief, you know, think about this. You know, we talk about healthcare as being such a huge issue with regards to the cost structure of, you know, that's screwing Americans blind, right? One of the fascinating pictures that I saw from this whole CrowdStrike fiasco was that there was an MRI machine that was blue screened. What in the name of God was somebody in a hospital administrative IT department thinking by having an MRI machine in a position where it was potentially at risk from some outside intrusion? Are you out of your effing mind?
Well, when you go get an MRI and you say send it to this email or send it to this doctor, how do they do it if it's not connected?
Well, you do it through a gateway. You have
I'm sure you.
Well, I'm just saying you don't have the machine directly connected to anything other than the infrastructure within the room and that you know that takes those images and puts them on a storage server somewhere. That's all it does. The premise of places like that and that sort of inefficiency and that sort of cost center. You know, I don't want to know what their bill is to someone like CrowdStrike, a hospital, for protecting all these machines. Okay, but I can tell you that 99% of that is money that should not have to have been spent at all, because the architecture was stupid and whoever designed it was feathering nests, including their own, by being employed, and they're not worth two nickels in terms of actual salary.
Let's push
this kind of inefficiency, Chief. This kind of inefficiency is everywhere, and here's the problem with this. This all works when money is free and you can borrow all you want at 0%.
Well, you also got industries that, I mean, if you, I don't know why this is a pet peeve of mine, but the people that I pay that don't come to work, like the Fed people and so forth.
Oh yeah, but you know what? All of this is now coming to an end.
But you can,
okay?
It isn't for exchanges or
It's going to, and it, I'll tell you what, in terms of economic instability, if you want to see economic instability, you better hope that what just happened within the Democrat Party doesn't get rewarded in November. Because that was literally Khrushchev, what happened to him.
Well,
what you saw was literally what happened to Khrushchev. And we know what happened to the Soviet Union, right, economically.
Well, it's a...
Well, you know what?
Well, I have a couple of specific questions. We'll just go into that on Tuesday. But Kevin was talking, and we were talking with Kevin. I want to make sure that I have at least 5 minutes to talk about, you know, what the stuff we talk about in the market and everything, and how some of these things are very dangerous. I mean, if everybody thinks the low end rates are coming down, but if the long term rates go up, what it does to the budget, what it does to everything. But I wanted to, I mean, we whenever we talk, I mean, I really I won't say have this issue, I don't, because Dan brings an amazing amount. But when he talks and Kevin talks and even I talk, we talk about places that we're used to and how they run. And
right.
Like this morning, Kevin was talking about the entrepreneurial spirit in his area, because mostly it's mid-level manufacturing and distribution, is alive and well. I don't think there's any question about that. Right. They have schools that are reacting to the training people need, and there's people that support the schools. I mean, it's nothing's perfect, but on a broad level, it's America that we know, right? It's not Russia. Right. It's not, and yet. Then Kevin made the comment, and I'm, you know, just because he made it doesn't make, talking about we have to corral some of the healthcare stuff, which we all know. I mean, we've all talked about it, you and I and Kevin probably more than anybody else, and Russell. Yet yesterday there was another big merger, Ascension or somebody bought somebody here in hospitals here in Chicago, in Illinois. How do the difference, I can't even quantify it economically. If somebody were to stick me back at the University of Chicago and I was a smart student, which I was then, I don't even know how I would model these massive, I use the term, almost fascist cartels with their nose up the ass of government. I mean, I don't know how you even model it. How do you break it? How would you even start to get some sort of a, what does an MRI really cost? Well, $6,000.
Chief, it's really easy. Whatever they charge one person, they must charge everybody. No exceptions, period. End of conversation. That's it. It's over. And the same thing's true when it comes to drugs, okay? And by the way, that extends internationally, because 15 U.S.C. Chapter 1 does.
I get what I'm saying.
Does.
How do you... I get the part. I mean, I think I know as
so,
well...
So
as,
just do that. So just do that.
Okay, but I'm saying I get the part about how an MRI, let's pick a number maybe a little higher. Let's say it ought to cost $500, because that's what people seem to be able to make money doing it in the storefront. And the machines look just as good as... Just saying, how do you get from there to the colossus that is Northwestern, that is Rush, with a bazillion people upstairs, this massive overhead, with people pouring money into them on the charity side, them charging overhead on the research being done? How do you even begin to try and unravel that mess when every single day it gets bigger?
Chief, you used a 100-year-old law that has stood and is unenforced by both sides of the political aisle. So you cannot point at one side or the other at the answer to this, because, by God, as I've pointed out, you know, since Trump ran and won in 2016, on the night of the election, the three planks that essentially said he was going to do exactly that disappeared on election night.
Yeah.
And were never seen again. All right, and you have zero coming from the other side of the aisle about this, other than to crow about the fact that Biden killed and then reinstated Trump's rule on insulin.
Well, they're going to pick five or six drugs and say they won the war.
Well, of course yeah. They are, which means nothing, right? And you and I both know that.
Well,
now, if you happen to be one of the people that needs one of those five or six drugs, it's great. But for everybody else, it doesn't.
Well, what I'm trying to do here, seemingly miserably, is take it out of the stream of the personalities, and we know who's behind. The money behind both parties is the same.
Right.
So what I'm saying is, the economic model I'm trying to do here, and I'm having trouble. The Tripoli tap. Nick could walk in next week and say, I need to make $1 million a year, and I've divided it by the amount of beers we sell, so we better charge $2 more a beer, because that's my salary, that's our new overhead rate, and walk out. At the level of the Tripoli tap, that's a spear into your heart, right? Because it is a competitive sort of situation.
Right, and if you're $2 more than the guy next door, you're not in business.
Guess what,
for
Nick?
Very long.
You may think you're going to get $1 million, but the check's going to bounce, right?
Right.
But now, we have so many places in society. I mean, I was kidding Dan yesterday. He started rattling off all the places that are competitive, and he's talking restaurants, bars, and barbershop. I said, okay, Dan, you're going to get through one hand easy. The second hand, not so easy, and you're not going to need your toes.
Right.
You know, and which is, I'm not, you know, I'm not criticizing anybody. I'm just saying from the economic models that I learned, they don't even apply. I mean, try and tell Northwestern that gets a contribution check for $20 million that the guy up top doesn't deserve $10 million over the hell he makes.
I don't care. I don't care what he makes. Look, you can't solve this from the top down. Okay, you solve this from the bottom up.
So how do you do that? How do you put Tom and Carl in the competitive business where I can actually sit there and go, if you want a shot, I'll say penicillin, show my age. It's $20 here and not $500. How do you even do that without going to war?
What you do is you take the CEO of or the hospitalist or whatever his name is, okay, and you show up with the black car, and you march into his office. You throw his butt in handcuffs. You frog march him out the front door. He goes in the back of the car. He gets tried for violating 15 USC, and he does 10 years in the can. And after you do that about three times, because the first time people are going to say, oh, well, he donated to the wrong political candidate. That's why he got canned, right? That's what they're going to say.
It might actually be true, actually.
Well, yeah, it might be true. Yeah. That's right. But you know what? Then you know, 2 days later, you show up at, you know,
But
you show up at Sacred Heart, and you do the same thing to them over in Des Plaines.
Carl, I'm not, again, I'm having trouble with this, because I don't disagree at all with what, quote, has to happen.
I'm saying it is
such a big event. People revere these places. I mean, if you and I were elected instead of the two people running, somehow or another, there's a third party and we're it and we're landing there. What, it took 10 years to take Standard Oil apart. I mean,
I understand that, but look, it's the same, Chief, it's the same point I've made, though, when it comes to illegal immigration, okay? There is a law that's been on the books since the 1950s that says that if you're employing those people, if you're harboring them, you're giving them money, you're allowing them to have housing, it's 5 or 10 years in the can.
Well, there's what I'm trying to do is not disagree, because I'm not.
Enforced the FN law.
Okay, I get that, but you can't say that we had in our recent lifetime. Okay, you know, it's a while ago, but for you and I, it's recent. We had a medical situation that was falling apart when the big insurance company stopped paying full price and essentially taking care of the other people, and they said, we're not doing it anymore. You had this big problem. Now, you had a lady named Hillary put something together. I don't remember what it was all about. And the Republicans, and maybe the industry behind the Republicans, and maybe behind her back in the Democratic Party, so I'm not blaming the Republicans, said, we don't want any part of this. Because maybe it addressed some costs, maybe it didn't, I don't know well enough about it. So then he's out of there, and we get George Bush in there. George Bush looked at the problem, or maybe didn't even look at it, and said, I'm not doing that for 8 years, screw that, I'll leave that one to the next guy. So he didn't do anything. So now the thing's getting worse and worse and worse, and now all of a sudden Obama gets in there, and he decides he's going to do something, and the thing gets so co-opted along the way between the lobbyists from the hospitals and doctors being all over the damn place, and all of a sudden it didn't address costs at all. And I think I read, Carl, in the meantime...
Actually, it quadrupled the price.
Well,
which was enough to drive me out of entrepreneurship on a permanent basis.
Yeah,
how much tax revenue did they give up by doing that?
Well, I think that you know, this is my point about the people we have running, okay? Not just this time, but the last four or five times. When they start this, they don't seem to know enough. I mean, Obama is obviously a brilliant man. The man's president. People love him. He did kind of a lot of good. I'll just give him all his kudos in the world. When it comes to looking at the costs of an industry, I don't think he can carry my jack. Now, did he care enough to look? Did he ride herd on it? Did he pass it off to the wrong people? And whenever it got on his desk, he took that and signed? I don't know. But what I know is during the time that they were working on Obamacare, wasn't there like 70 or 80 or 100 combinations in the insurance industry? By the time they got done writing the bill, the industry was so different from when they started, the bill didn't even cover it, did it? Or wasn't even make any sense?
So Obama, you know, like so much, but it was bad enough when you had this, you know, this 700-page bill that shows up, right? That, you know, well, you have to pass it in order to be able to read it.
Yeah,
which is how it was put through. All right, it was put through on the floor under suspension of the rules, and there was no possible way for people. I actually read the entire thing the night before it was voted on. It was released a day ahead.
Yeah, it was like a day or two ahead. I remember that.
One day ahead, yeah. And I stayed up all night, literally, with the espresso machine going full bore. When I lived in Florida, and I read the entire thing. I had like 15, you know, at the time I had a 4-up trading console screen going, and that's what you end up having to do, because, you know, the way those bills are written is take these two lines out of this section of code and put in these four words.
Yeah.
Okay, so in order to figure out what the blank that law actually is going to do, you have to go look at all the cross references. There's no other way to figure it out, and of course they write it that way on purpose.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, I knew what it was going to do before it was voted on.
Well, we got a dash here, Crowd. My point is, you and I seeing something that needs to be righted is a lot different than looking at what it would take to write it. I mean, how long did it take to bust up AT&T, for God's sake?
Chief, all you got to do is start arresting people for violating laws that have been on the books for 100 years. And after you do about three of those arrests, and people are facing the reality.
You got to give people some kind of warning if all of a sudden you're
going
to do it.
No, you don't give anybody any warning. You march in and you do it. And after about the third or fourth one, it will stop in a day, because nobody's going to do the rest of their natural life rotting in a federal prison cell in order to keep making the money.
But how do you back up the fact that you just built some massive series of buildings that are 80% administration?
You're going to
tear them all down?
So all of a sudden there's going to be a whole bunch of really cheap commercial real estate available for new enterprises.
We don't need any more.
Isn't that a great thing?
We don't need any more cheap commercial space in Chicago.
You know, hey, listen, you know what? Part of the reason I was as successful as I was I got Class A office space for $8 a square foot.
Well, there you have it.
Well, also, don't tell me it's a bad thing. It was a great thing for me.
Tuesday, let's not forget to talk about why is it and some of the stuff and the finances in some of these countries that you and I are warning about. It almost seems like my great niece is my grandmother by the time something bad happens. It just seems like it keeps, somehow or another, they just keep it going, Carl. Let's talk Tuesday about how they're doing it. I mean, because they are.
It's going to come apart this year.
All right, well, okay. Well, then that's a possibility. I wish I could tell you, I wish I knew the date. There's a lot of money in that for me and my clients.
Well, yeah, you know, I'd love to know exactly when I should buy that huge stash of puts, right?
Well, yeah. I know I was buying the calls early in 1982. I've always been early. SP Futures up 38, NASDAQ Futures up 175. Maybe we can hold a rally today. We'll tell about it on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.